to the Sailing Road. If you have ever dreamed of sailing off over the horizon, or if you just like to cruise the coast or your local lake, then this podcast is for you. In this episode, we feature part one of our interview with Liz and Jamie from the Follow the Boat series, and we talk about their global cruising adventures. We also have some more sailing news, and our product of the week is a great backup power supply to get your engine started and power all your mobile devices. Hello, everyone. My name is Steve, and I am joined by my beautiful sailing partner and co-host, my fiance, Brandy.
That would be me. Hello, everybody.
So we are back in the home studio. We've been home for 2 weekends in a row now.
Sucks. You know, we get exhausted from constantly being on the go, but then when we're home, it's like, I want to go. I want to be on the boat. I miss being on the boat when we're not on the boat. So it's, I don't know. We get things done. We definitely need the downtime.
We needed to be home to get a few things done.
I know.
So we got that taken care of. And our last trip was great. We went to Silver Glen Springs, which is off of Lake George in Central Florida.
Yep.
And, it's been a while since we've been there, and I forgot how much I like it.
Right.
And how enjoyable it is. In fact, usually we go on the holiday weekends, which gets a little overcrowded, a little bit much. And we went on a non-holiday weekend. But in the summer, it was
fairly still busy.
Still pretty crowded, but nothing like
nothing
it is
like holiday
weekends.
No way.
But what's really cool about the spring is that the spring, Natural Fred Spring, is constantly putting out 72-degree crystal clear water. I mean, it's just perfectly
beautiful, crystal
clear. And that 72-degree water, we didn't even think about it. It's, number one, it's refreshing on a 95-degree day in Florida. But we found that at night, we didn't even need our air conditioner because it cools off everything around it. Even the boat was cool. Inside the boat was cool. Yeah.
The first night, we did use our air. But the second night, we were laying there and we were just like, I'm not getting up to put it in.
It actually got chilly the next morning. It was actually
kind of
chilly. So
it really cools down the hull of the boat.
And we took our auxiliary crew member with us.
Yep. Ellie. Ellie hung out.
Ellie the dog came, which Ellie never gets to go on boating trips because we usually go somewhere in salt water or it's just inconvenient to take her to shore. And it's just much easier, especially if we go ashore to go to a restaurant or something. She gets a little nervous. So we knew we were going to be on the boat the whole weekend this weekend. And we figured
easy access to land.
It's really easy to take her over to shore. And we're not moving the boat around at all. And so it was great. And so we took her and she had a blast.
She loved it. She is our celebrity dog.
Yeah,
she's like having a brand new baby all the time. Brand new babies get all this attention. People goo and just want to talk to them and see them. And that's Ellie.
Well, she gets wet and then all of her curls, because she's a black standard poodle. If people haven't listened to the podcast, we've talked about her before, but she's a black standard poodle. And when she gets wet, her curls just turn into like this
Jerry curl.
And she's just a beautiful dog. And so she just gets so much attention. So we put her on this ski tube that we have to tow her back and forth to shore so we don't have to carry her around through the deep water. And then sometimes during the day, we'll kind of tow her around along all the boats with all our friends, and she just gets so much attention. In fact, sometimes I have these sunglasses that I can put on, and she's so calm. You can put anything on her, and she'll leave them on.
She's very patient.
So we put these sunglasses on her and tow her around, and we could have put Taylor Swift on a float. And
I think sometimes you wish you were single because it attracts every possible female.
we could tow around Taylor Swift and she would not get as much attention. I mean, it's amazing. So
yeah, she loved it.
She had a blast.
And we have to keep her on the float because even though poodles are water dogs, she's very timid. We put her in the water and she just floats. Her butt in goes straight up in the air and she like walks. She doesn't really, she knows how to swim and she will when it becomes necessary, but she just kind of like slowly moves and then her butt just floats. It's hilarious. But
she's like a kid that panics when they first learn to swim and just the legs start going everywhere and she starts sinking.
Slowly started getting the hang of it by the end of the weekend.
I gave her some swimming lessons over that weekend, but she's still roughing it on the swimming. So this cruise is always, it's fairly easy to do. We always launch it. There's a little town in Central Florida called Astor, and there's a bridge that goes through town. It's a really small little country town. And from that ramp where we launch, it's about a 30-minute cruise to get over the lake. And there's some no wake zones, but we actually, because we can get up on plane, we did, you know, 14, 15 knots a couple times, both over and coming back. And a lot of boats just stay all weekend. In fact, we went over with two boating friends of ours, and we didn't realize it, that a bunch of other boating friends of ours were going over to meet up with a big, one of the local boat dealers was having an event. So they all went over that same weekend. So we ended up having probably 9 or 10 boats of friends.
Yeah, it was fun.
All together, rafted up. And we'll have some good videos and pictures of it. We'll post online here soon. Yeah,
the ramp itself is actually right off of the St. John's River. I don't think you just mentioned that. But yeah. Lake George is one of the lakes that comes off of the St. John's River. So you just go north on the St. John's River, you hit the Lake George, and it's literally to the west side of the lake. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and it's just a natural Fred spring that feeds right into the lake. And so we hung out there for the weekend. We had a lot of fun, good dancing and karaoke party.
Karaoke, of course.
Had a good karaoke party on Saturday night.
We did get a request about how we hook up karaoke on the boat, and we promise we will eventually make a small little video and throw that up on YouTube so you guys can see Steve's contraption that he does on the boat. So.
Yeah, I need to optimize my system. It's not made – it's really – it needs full power. So I guess you could always use an inverter because my mixer uses a 120. I don't have it. There's no way to plug it's a special plug, and it doesn't have a way to plug any kind of a adapter into it to power that. So I guess somebody could use a generator or something, but I'll just post the way I do it. And then if somebody can figure out a different mixer that has the thing, they can do that. So we had great time all weekend, launched Friday night, and then had a great weekend, and then came back on Sunday night. And just before, the weather was gorgeous. We didn't have rain all weekend. And then just before we got back to the ramp,
Nasty squall. We
got hit by a squall. And I was freezing my butt off. It's amazing how much the temperature drops when you're in those squalls. So I'm steering the boat, and you and Ellie are down below, and I'm freezing, singing, having a good time, trying to stay warm, jumping around.
Yep, and I'll be eventually making a video of the weekend there, too. It won't be too big because it was a pretty quick weekend, and we literally didn't move. So it'll be a small video, but show the beautiful water of the lake, the Silver Glen area. So.
Yeah, it's a different kind of cruise. It's more river cruising, and you know, we don't even bother putting up the mast. So
nope.
We're just cruising. We didn't even put the ballast in. We just went the whole weekend full speed.
True, we didn't at all.
So we got done with that. The next thing we have coming up is next weekend, we are taking a trip to Nashville.
Super excited. We love Nashville.
It's a great town. It's one of our favorite weekend towns to go to. If you love great music, go to Nashville for a weekend. It's a lot of country music, but there's a lot of other kind of music there, but just great songwriters. Pretty much you can walk into a bar on a Tuesday night in Nashville and hear somebody that should have a national tour. They're
absolutely
amazing. So we're really looking forward to that. We're going to be there the 4th through the 7th. So if anybody's listening and they're in the Nashville area and they want to come out and meet up with us for a beer or listen to some music, we'll be hitting the town probably Friday and Saturday night. And so that's coming up. And been working on a couple other things. I've been really focused on trying to start our plans for cruising. And a lot of that has to do with changing our lifestyle and starting to downsize, and we still got a lot of stuff to sell. So every week I am trying to focus on putting things up for sale, putting things on Craigslist, on eBay. And
we're just going to have like a huge estate sale.
Yeah, but
if
you have years to go and there's things that you don't need, I just need to become more active in constantly selling off things I'm not using. And I've committed myself to it, and I'm starting to list things. So
okay, I'll pat you on the back in a couple weeks.
You know, you probably have a few things you could sell there in that massive closet of yours.
Listen, the clothes will be the last thing that goes. So
so we're working on that. We'll get there eventually. And we have another Brandy video production that has been released. So if you're following us on YouTube, you might have already saw it. But what did you release this time?
That one was the Sebastian trip when we were down at Captain Hiram's and we got engaged.
Yeah, I knew that one's one that you wanted to put together. So
yeah, it was fun.
Show the weekend and all the fun we had. It was also your birthday weekend.
Oh, yeah. I guess the engagement overruled my birthday. I keep forgetting that it was my birthday that weekend. But yeah. So,
And if you're watching any of the videos, go on YouTube, watch them. Please, if you like the video, give it a thumbs up. There's a little thumbs up button. And if you make a comment too, both of those things go together in the way that YouTube ranks videos and gets us a little bit more viewership on those. So really makes a big difference when you do that, or anybody that you watch their videos that you really like do that, really helps them out. So another thing we forgot last episode to talk about, do you know what episode number this is?
You know, I do now, but at the time I did not. And if you notice, we don't ever say episode number. Steve doesn't like that. And I think that it's kind of neat, but we hit number 25 last time, which is big.
Yeah, it's That's a big accomplishment.
Number. We are a quarter of a way to 100.
And we're still doing this.
And we're still going. So it'll be fun when we hit, I guess, 50 will be the big one.
We missed the big celebration on the last one. So I guess we got to wait now until 50. So that's probably about a year away. We're probably averaging about 2 a month. So.
You never know. We could just get crazy and do this
that's all. Not we're probably going down to 1 a month here soon, the way things are going. But
no way.
We're trying. So we'll get there eventually. But so we're celebrating the big 25 and heading for 50 and more.
And I think they have really gotten better over the past 25. You know, it's funny when we hear people send us messages and say, hey, I just started listening. I'm on like number 4 or something. And we're like, oh Lord, can you skip up to like 10 for us so that you get past all of the kinks?
I don't know. We've made some mistakes in the recent ones too. So we're still working on it, but
we're rookies.
Yeah. And something else I want to mention. I guess you were packing for Cuba this week.
Yeah,
right?
You know what? I got asked, do you want to pack the boat and let's go to Cuba? You don't say things unless you mean it to me, bud.
Yeah, so I was working out of town this week, and early in the morning I'd looked at Facebook, and a buddy of ours posted this absolutely gorgeous video of a beach in Cuba. It's Cayo Largo, Cuba. And it's just so pristine and beautiful. And there's a sailboat offshore, and it kind of pans through the whole thing. So I sent it to Brandy on Facebook. I shared it with her and said, hey, we don't have any plans this weekend. Do you want to go to Cuba? And I laughed because I'm thinking, I bet you she's already got the...
I'm at the grocery store now.
Yeah, she's packing the food box and packing things up and getting ready to go. So
it is definitely on our list. We want to get down there before it gets very Americanized. And
it's probably too late for that.
You think so?
Yeah, they're already... All the flights are leaving from Florida now, and the cruise ships are all going. It's too late. We already missed it. Jumped the shark. Cuba has jumped the shark.
It can't be that bad.
No, it's not. I'm sure it's take a long time to get there. It's just, and it's kind of like Money Never Ket and Will were talking about Old San Juan. It's kind of got that, you know, same feel. It, you know, it's always going to have that feel. It's going to have, it's Cuba.
That's true.
You know, it's different. So eventually it'll
definitely be,
they'll have more amenities probably eventually, right. But it's going to take a long time for it to change. And hopefully we'll get there in the next couple of years. Another thing I want to talk about is some of the other sailing podcasts. And I don't know, you know, I listen to all kinds of podcasts. You know, my work requires a lot of time in the car and airplanes and travel. And so when I get some free time, one of the things I like to do is listen to podcasts. And I listen to all kinds, not just sailing podcasts, but I do listen to pretty much every sailing podcast just to, you know, I love the content. I love hearing other stories that people come up with. So a couple of them, these aren't ones you listen to, go out and check them out. But if I'm sure probably the biggest one and the one that's been around the longest right now that's out there is 59 Degrees North with Andy Schell. And he does a lot of offshore sailing and interviews, so it's really good. And Andy just did a recent story that's really cool. I was going to say it's cool. It was kind of scary, is where he had appendicitis offshore and they had to get him inshore really quick and make sure that he was taken care of, and everything worked out fine. But it was scary to hear what he went through, and can imagine if he was going across the Atlantic when that happens. Pretty scary. Another one, Sail Loot. Teddy J is the host of there, and he talks a lot about making money while cruising and saving up to go cruising. And Teddy and I actually met in Atlanta last month when I was traveling on business, and got together and had a beer and kind of chatted mostly about podcasts and everything that we go through to produce these. So that was fun. But we talked a little bit about sailing and future plans too. So definitely check out the Sail Loot podcast. Another one, Shooting the Breeze. That's Jeffrey Wedding. And he does a lot of interviews around the Chesapeake Bay area. a lot of stories coming out of there, and they're just really interesting. A lot of historical boats, things along those lines. Another one, this one's been around a long time too, is the Sailing Podcast. That's by David Anderson out of Australia. He's been a little bit slow lately, but I know he's got young kids and other things going on in his life, so he's probably busy with that. And Slow Boat Sailing, that's another fairly new one. Linus Wilson, he just actually completed his first leg of his part-time circumnavigation. And it's really interesting. He's got this whole concept of, you know, each summer he's a university professor, and so he's got summers off, and so each summer he's going to take a different leg and go around the world. And
I so like that idea.
Yeah, he's been talking about that. It's really interesting. So check him out in Slow Boat Sailing. A couple new ones that have come out, the Ocean Sailing Podcast, that's out of Australia. He's doing a lot of good interviews. A lot of Australian sailors kind of get a different perspective on racing and sailing over in Australia. Sailing the Mediterranean Podcast, we've talked about that before. Franz always has great interviews and really finds some interesting topics to talk about. And he also talks about his, he does summer sailing over in the Med on his own boat. He leaves it over there and then goes over each summer and sails around and comes back and talks about his adventures.
Franz is the one that has the Sailing 101 classes.
Yeah, he also has the Sailing ASA 101 instructions, so check that out. Probably the one of the newest ones out there is by Sailing Anarchy. And so if you're familiar with the Sailing Anarchy website, it's the most popular sailing website on the web. Clean, Mr. Clean from Sailing Anarchy, does interviews a lot about racing and other things that are going on in the sailing industry. But he just did this really interesting interview on the Race to Alaska. So if anybody's heard about that, it's an adventure race. I think it goes like 700 miles up Alaska, and it's all small boats. It's very similar to what my brother does with the Everglades Challenge.
Okay.
And I really like the interviews. He really did a nice job on interviewing. He's a professional sailing broadcaster, so he's got this stuff down. He's been interviewing people a long time and does a really good job of it. And then the last one that just came out last week, and we're going to talk about it a little bit later in this podcast, is the Follow the Boat Podcast. And this is a re-release of a podcast. It was one of the original sailing podcasts that were out there, and I'd listened to it years ago, probably 5-6 years ago, I think it was now, that it was on, and it's since left off of iTunes, and they've just started re-releasing the episodes, and they're really good. After you listen to this interview with Liz and Jamie, you'll see that they're just really entertaining, and it's fun to listen to the podcast again. So I think that's it. I just wanted to share, you know, some of the other sailing podcasts we listen to, what I really like about them, and get out there and listen and share and tell them that you enjoy their shows. And
let's be honest, it's what you listen to. I just snorted. Sorry, I don't really listen to podcasts. I listen to us.
You listen to a couple of these.
There are a couple that I do enjoy listening to them with you. But right. I'm a music girl. I get in the car and I sing my little heart out.
Singing at the top of your lungs.
He doesn't understand. He's like, don't you get bored with listening to the radio? Absolutely not. I love music.
I love music too. But
some of these are very entertaining and very informative.
Usually
so yes.
What happens is I'll hear one that's an interview with another cruising couple that I think really has, you know, had some great adventures and ideas, and I say, go listen to this one, and then you still listen to music. Don't listen to it until I'm with you.
Are we done yet?
I think sometimes maybe when you're in the gym or something, working out, you'll listen to them. No, not then
yeah,
either.
No.
Okay.
But you know, they're just going to come back to listen to us, so, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, listen to us first, and then go listen to these other guys.
Just some suggestions, that's all.
So that is it for our intro chat here. I think we've hit it all. So up next is our interview with Liz and Jamie from Follow the Boat. Be right back. Okay, we are back. We're going to start part one of our interview with Liz and Jamie from Follow the Boat. And as I said, I found out about Liz and Jamie from their podcast when it first came out years ago. And I've been following them since then. And eventually they moved away from podcasts and into video because they were doing a lot of refits from their boat. And that's hard to explain on podcasts. So they went into video, and they have great video YouTube channel now. So I've been following them for probably, I don't know, 8 years now. So from the beginning of starting our podcast, I said, I really got to interview Liz and Jamie because they're just so entertaining and fun to watch their videos and everything. And so we started this pursuit, I think it was last October, and finally got around through them being different places and hard to connect and us being busy. We finally...
11-hour difference.
Yeah, 11 hours of difference. That's a challenge too. And so we finally got together and connected. And so here is part one of the interview. So why don't we start off with, you know, where you guys are located right now, where you're at, where the boat's at.
We are currently at Phuket Yacht Haven Marina. We've been here for a few months, and Phuket Yacht Haven Marina is in Phuket in Thailand.
Fantastic. And how long have you been in Thailand now?
So we crossed from the Maldives to Malaysia in, when was it, 2013?
Yeah.
So we've really been flitting between Langkawi and Malaysia and Thailand since 2013.
And of all the places that you've cruised, is this kind of a favorite spot? Because it seems like as you guys have cruised around different areas, you find somewhere you like and stay for a while.
Well, that's a really difficult one. To choose, it's like, I mean, how do you choose between chocolate and cheese? They've all got great, you know, there's good things and bad things in everywhere we've been. I don't know, would you say this is our favourite?
I would certainly put Thailand up there. I think mainly in terms of its scenery, the people and the culture. The sailing is a little bit hit and miss. Sometimes you can go for weeks without wind. And the place that Thailand reminds me a lot of in terms of its scenery is Turkey. And we always say Turkey is still one of our favorite places to actually have been sailing because the winds are very consistent in Turkey. But there are a lot of places down the Red Sea that we fell in love with as well.
Yeah, the trip along the Red Sea was probably our favorite. That was absolutely fantastic. I suppose it's not really cruising, and it's more of a passage.
Right. So why don't we go back and how you guys got started in sailing, when you got the boat, all of that. What got you interested in sailing and started sailing and cruising?
Well, so neither of us come from a sailing background. We both got into sailing quite late on in our lives. For me, the way it happened was my brothers and myself bought my father a retirement present, which was a little sailing trip across the North Sea, because he was in the Sea Scouts and he always talked about, you know, buying a little boat. And he said, well, I'll do this trip, but at least one of you has to come with me. So that was my first experience of sailing. And I was 30, I think, back then. And after leaving my small company, I went off and did yacht deliveries just as a gap, a stop before setting up another business.
And that was because you fell in love with sailing, wasn't it?
Indeed, yeah, and loved it. And on one of those deliveries, which happened to from Europe to Antigua in the Caribbean, halfway across, I decided I never wanted to return to land and that I quite liked the idea of living on a boat. And that trip itself coincided with me bumping into Liz on Christmas Day, and she was in Antigua on holiday with some friends. And it pretty much started from there.
Yeah, I mean, from my side, Jamie had a lot more experience of sailing than I did. I'd been on a couple of boats in the UK and decided that I would do a very basic competent crew certificate so that I understood a little bit more about yachts. But I was very much involved in very hard work. And when I met Jamie, I think my background and his experience, it just gelled into this almost instant idea that we wanted to give it all up, leave the rat race and go live together on a boat. So not much sailing experience when we bought Esper at all.
No. And so we bought her in Turkey. She's a British-built boat. She's an Oyster 435 catch cutter. But we actually bought her in Turkey, and which was... not too difficult to transition, since Liz's brother was married to a Turkish girl, and we had an instant set of friends in Bodrum when we moved over there. So the transition was quite easy for us.
Yeah, and it was our very first boat, so we learned everything on Espa right from the beginning.
Was there a specific reason why you picked the oyster, or did you look at other boats? What was your kind of your short list of requirements when you were looking for the boat?
That's such a big question, and that's a question we get asked a lot by people. You know, how do you choose your boat? What do you look for? As you, I'm sure you know yourselves, it's horses for courses. It's what you need out of it.
Right.
Jamie had the experience, so he had the technical idea of what you wanted, didn't you? And we got exactly what you thought, didn't we?
Well, almost. There were two things on the list I didn't want, and one was a catch and the other was in-mast furling.
Both of which and we now have.
We now have a in-mast furling catch.
Right.
I'd had some experience with catches, and actually I really, I wasn't so sure about the in-mast, but for a four-sail rig, she's actually very easy to sail. So that counted for something because it's a boat that I can sail quite happily on my own. Not that I like to, I prefer Liz to be there, but it's a very easy boat to sail. But I think the blue water element was the most important. It had to be something that we felt comfortable in rough season.
Yeah, because we knew that we didn't know exactly where we wanted to go. We originally had an idea of going around the world, but we did know we were going to be going across some big seas. We wanted to have the absolute safest boat that we could find. And so it was all about blue water cruisers and strong boats, wasn't it? We had a little short list.
Of course, the other thing as well is that as liverboards, perhaps the second most or even the most important thing is your own comfort when you're not sailing. And it has to be a comfortable boat that you can move around in, find your own separate areas, a comfortable cabin. So because... center cockpit, the aft cabin was nice and big and roomy and gives us both space. So that was also an important element to the decision process, wasn't it?
Yeah, it certainly was. And of course, I suppose you have to bring in cost. It's kind of what you can get for your money. And we knew that Oyster was a very good make, and pretty much the 435 covered off everything we wanted. And the one in Turkey came up. Well, it had been there all the way along. We kept seeing it on paper, but it was too far for us to go and visit. And eventually we just took a punt and went out there and saw it, because it was a little less than most of the others because of where it was, I guess.
Yeah. As we've shopped around and started thinking about our future blue water boat, I think we've kind of narrowed it down to the center cockpits. It always seemed more comfortable to us. It just, as we've toured around and just the layout of them, it just seems to be very, you know, comfortable living quarters. I've never sailed on one. I don't think I've ever been in a center cockpit, so I'll have to go sailing on one sometime just to see how it feels.
One of the things with the center cockpit is feel like you're in a boat half the size because you're actually, in the middle and looking out forward, and it doesn't feel so intimidating. But, of course, the main thing is the safety factor. I mean, I think one of the downsides, of course, is that you do tend to compromise on the cockpit space.
Yes.
So whilst a blue water cruiser was ideal for us, of course, we've been on many much lighter boats like Beneteaus and Jeanneaus. And those kind of boats for coastal hopping and day sailing are great. And the one thing they have are nice large cockpits for sundowners with all your friends, which is something we struggle a bit with in the center cockpit.
Yeah, right. We still managed to get 20 people on the boat occasionally.
The more the merrier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's always a way to fit them on.
Yeah.
So I was curious, you know, one of the things I've seen you write on your blog is that you really are more of a travel blog than a sailing blog. When you started this, was it just a desire to go travel? And did you have a plan to permanently travel from that point on? Or were you just going to do it part-time?
Well, it's interesting as to why we started it, and I'm just going to hand over to Jamie here, because he started writing diaries when he was a child, so it's in his blood to keep a record of what he does. So do you want to explain how we've ended up where we are?
Yes, I think I'm a narcissist. I just like documenting my life, if nothing else, for my own entertainment. And so the blog started when I was doing deliveries, and it was really just a way of communicating to my family. And let's not forget, this was many, many years ago now. Well, 12, 13 years ago?
Longer.
Or, no, it was longer, 15 years ago now. It was really just a way to communicate with them. And they were just silly stories and observations, and I was very inexperienced. And but it was just a bit of fun putting that together. When I met Liz, I discovered very quickly that she had a talent for writing. And so she became quite a big part of the Follow the Boat. This is the written blog before we started doing videos. But I think both of us have wanderlust. We both love traveling and exploring, not just by sea, but on land as well. And I think we probably both agree that it's about meeting the people. That probably comes top, doesn't it? When we get to a new place, it's about meeting people, and then you know, beyond that, of course, the exploring, going up mountains or down rivers or whatever it is.
Archaeological sites and so forth. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why we tend to stay a long time in places, because we like to get a real feel for the culture and the country. They're all different in some ways and all similar in other ways. But yeah, the interesting between, what do you say, is it a travel blog, is it a sailing blog? When we talk about this in depth with people, I think we tend to agree with each other that we're travellers probably first and sailors second, and having the boat is a means to do the travelling. I think that's what I would say.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really do think that in looking at all kinds of sailors that go out and sail and have these travel blogs, you do a really good job of getting engaged with the local community. I've seen that time and time again, no matter from, you know, I started listening to you all when you had a podcast back in, I think it was 2010, maybe.
Yeah.
It was probably about, I think you had just passed through the Suez Canal when I started listening. And back then, there was really only, there's maybe three sailing podcasts out there. And people that are listening today, it's not on iTunes anymore, but it's on the website. I definitely will point people in the direction, because I really enjoyed the interviews and this. It was just kind of that a spoken log of the experiences you had in these different areas and the different sailing conditions. It was very interesting. I really liked it.
It's nice to hear that, Steve, because obviously we stopped doing the podcast some time ago now. They were really enjoyable to both conduct and edit, but they, and you know this, when you're podcasting audio only, it can take quite some time because you have no visual reference. So editing videos is almost easier. And, you know, we were getting more and more involved in the boat and in our actual travels. And so the podcast became more difficult for us to do. But what's great about podcasting, of course, is that it's a surreptitious little microphone that you can tuck away and take with you anywhere. It's not as intrusive as sticking a camera in front of someone's face. And, you know, we find this as we travel around, you know, with photography and videography, is that some people feel a bit uncomfortable about it, whereas with podcasting only, you can leap that hurdle by having this unobtrusive little item that will document. But I think for us now, especially for Liz, who's been getting more involved in the video editing, we're getting a lot of satisfaction out of this. And unfortunately, it's to the detriment of the written blog. We actually haven't written on followtheboat.com for a while now. It's really just a container for our videos.
Yeah, which is wrong. We need to do something about that. But once we've got the engine in, once we're back at anchor and we're back on track, I think we'll spend a bit more time doing it. Just going back to your point, though, about the travel over the sailing, it's really gratifying to hear you say that you enjoy that, because we do question sometimes, should we be doing this? Is this really sailing? Are people going to be interested? And then we say, no, this is what we're interested in, and if people like it, that's great.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that's why Steve and I enjoy your videos and you guys so much, because we're kind of in that same realm. We have our sailboat, and our boat is a multitasker, but we don't always sail. You know, we love going into these different areas and going into the little city and going into the tiki bars and meeting people and socializing. So we're kind of on that same outset with you guys.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned going into cities, and that's one of our favorite things that we like doing. It's not just the desolate beaches and the palm fringed shores. When we get somewhere where there is a hive of activity, whether it's a in a big city or a large town, or even just a small market in a village. We love, you know, feeding off that energy.
Yeah, and it's just boring just having us on the screen the whole time. We wouldn't want to look at just us. It's nice to get other people involved.
Yeah, we're slowly starting to do more video, and we're noticing that we need to have the video going more often, because it's like every time we look at something, it's us.
Well, you learn when you start doing the editing, because you and Brandy just started doing the editing, and now she has a new appreciation when we're out on a trip of what needs to get videoed, because nothing's more frustrating than when you come back and you start editing the video and you say, we didn't even video that half of the day. We missed the whole, we enjoyed it. We had a great time, but it's all in our brains and in our minds. You know, you just don't have
it. Exactly. And again, it's another one of those compromises. We now have to think when we're stuck in, especially when we're stuck in a job or a task where we're running around shouting at each other, one of us needs to stop and say, hold on, we should be recording this. Inappropriate moment to be recording. But what you'll find is that as you record more and more, you actually start to think of the editing process whilst you're recording. And that's quite a useful thing to bear in mind, is to think, when I come to record this little episode of replacing a membrane in the water maker or whatever it is, you have to think, okay, well, how's this going to pan out as a video? Because people are going to want to know, well, you didn't record showing putting this bolt on. So you have to think, okay, how's this story going to make sense? And, you know, that's one of those things that we always have to bear in mind. And again, as I say, it's a little bit of a compromise to our sailing, that we're thinking about the editing as well.
Yeah, we definitely try to make that balance. I don't want to do it so much that it distracts from the trip itself, but
exactly,
you figure it out. You just kind of find that balance.
Yes, exactly. And I've always said to Liz, the day that this becomes a chore is the day that we stop recording.
Yeah. Right.
Just as a very quick aside here on forgetting to video things, we forgot to bring the camera to video this. So you might hear in the background my phone making funny noises because I'm trying to video it with my phone.
That's funny.
That's okay. We completely understand. And we've actually, you were talking about putting things on the blog. I had originally tried to do, you know, we were doing the podcast and we were doing some videos on our trips, and then I would do a written description of the trip, and it was just too much. And I'm finding that there's a shift in the marketplace anyway. It seems that, you know, we like the audio because I drive a lot for work. And so I really enjoy podcasts because it gives me something to entertain me that I don't have to be looking at a screen. And now videos have become, you know, so prevalent that I think there's just a really shift in the marketplace. People are looking to consume things in that way and seeing the video and the true multimedia of it. You know, the written blogs are still great, but I think it's just more people are shifting to where they're just not taking the time to read it. They just want to see the adventure on screen.
That's a couple of things. That's people's attention spans, my own included, have got shorter, and we want things now. And the other thing is the technology. So we now have the ability to sit with a smartphone whilst traveling to work and watching a video with our headphones on. It's easier to engage, I think, with a video than it is to actually read. It requires less effort, and it's what people are used to doing. So we've noticed exactly the same thing, and I think that's partly why the written blog and the podcasts have sort of, you know, slowed down and stopped. And we've moved over to videos because we got so much instant feedback from people. And I remember my cousin years ago was always telling us, do videos, do videos. And I said, it's not physically possible to do these videos on the boat. But, you know, we've found a way, and it's working for us. We enjoy doing it. We love the feedback. That's the other thing as well, is the two-way communication that you can have with people. And when people comment on YouTube, or sometimes they email or on our Facebook page, you can get a dialogue going, and you get ideas from people as to what
works. Well,
we've
learned a lot, haven't
we? Yeah, I mean, all the time people are saying, oh, you know, I don't like this, or I like that, or, you know, can you do a bit of this? So it's useful to have that feedback there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we usually get that. It's funny because I'll record something and then I'll look at it as I'm sitting on the boat sailing along, and I look at the sail and something's not trimmed right. And I'm like, oh, somebody's going to say something about that. And I fix it right after that. But it's like, it's on video now. Somebody saw that, you know, they're going to pick that apart. And
we just did that this weekend, by the way.
Yeah, it happens all the time.
We do it all the time, Brandy. Don't worry.
So let's talk a little bit about your travels so far. Like I said, when I started listening to you, I guess you started off in Turkey and Greece, and then you really took an interesting path that I don't think a lot of people have documented, and that's coming down through the Suez Canal and through really some dangerous areas. So tell us a little bit about the travels down through kind of Pirate Alley and all of that.
Liz is saying, I want to tell this story, but what I do want to say is that we made a very good friend in Turkey who was our, he was a friend who surveyed our boat. Yeah. And he kept saying, go east, young man, go east, because we were in the East Med. And of course, we know the Mediterranean fairly well between ourselves because obviously we're from the UK. Whereas the idea of going east or south and then southeast was far more appealing because it was an area that neither of us had explored.
Yeah, that's actually what I was going to say. The decision was a long one, and we did put up on our website a little poll, didn't we, asking people if we should go west or east. But anyway, we chose east in the end for the reasons that Jamie's just said. But that was after 3 years of being based in Turkey and sailing in the Greek islands, went as far as Cyprus. We were going to Syria. This is before it all kicked off over there, and decided, we hadn't quite got time, and we're really kicking ourselves for missing it now because it's such a beautiful country that's being destroyed. But anyway.
Well, we considered Libya as well.
Yeah,
that was another
one
we looked at.
Yeah, because, yes, before we went to through the Suez, we did think North Africa would be really fascinating. And, of course, all of these choices at the moment, not possible. Anyway, so we set off through the Suez thinking we wanted to get to India, a place I'd been to several times and absolutely love. It's one of these places you love or hate. There's no in between. And I really hoped that Jamie would love it as much as I did. I mean, how much do you want us to say? Do you want us to go through the trip or just talk about the countries?
I think kind of talk about that decision and the fact that you knew you were going to end up into, a fairly dangerous area. The fact that you, joined this rally to help with that.
Yeah.
Okay, so just to put this timescape in perspective, we traveled down the Red Sea in between the time the Chandlers were kidnapped in Somalia and the very sad demise of Quest. We traveled in between that time, 2010, 2011. 2009, 2010. Yeah. Sorry. That was the peak of the piracy. This was before the naval task forces and the African Union really started being proactive and trying to tackle the piracy issues. However, we met a Dutchman called Lo Broest, who had run a very, very informal rally called the Vasco da Gama. And he had done this trip 5 or 6 times between Turkey and India and got to know many of the authorities and the bureaucracy involved in all of the countries in between Turkey and India. So he was quite experienced in taking boats up and down this this particular route. We met him, we got chatting to him, and we even ended up going down with a number of boats that we knew already from Turkey. Very, very loose rally. I wouldn't call it a formal rally. It was really just a collection of people who had a common interest. And, of course, the main concern was going down up Pirate Alley, the Gulf of Aden. And the idea was of doing the rally was to do this in formation, which is exactly what we did. We ended up grouping into 4 groups of 4 and kept together within visual distance of each other. And didn't run our tricolours. We ran our lower lights at night, no radio, it was radio silence. So that was really why we did that trip. We felt that we were comfortable enough to do it in company. I'd say in hindsight, it was still very, very risky.
It was very risky, and it was only at the very last minute, really, we decided to do the rally. We were determined to do it on our own. We're not really like many cruisers, particularly fond of rallies, but because the piracy was bad and because Lo had the experience, we just thought sailing in this collective would be the best thing. And to be honest with you, all the way from Turkey to Eritrea, it wasn't really a rally. It was sort of
Yeah, it was.
Meet you here in 3 weeks.
That's
do
right.
What you like.
Lo had all the waypoints for recognised or recommended anchorages. So we would meet up, say, in Port Suez, where we spent a few days, and then he'd say, okay, the next scheduled meeting will be 2 weeks' time, and we're going to meet here. And in between there and here are a number of anchorages I recommend. And that's really how it worked until we got down to the bottom of the Red Sea when we all got together.
Mm. So you had some flexibility. You were somewhat cruising on your own. Did a lot of the boats still stay together?
Oh, yes. I mean, I think most people would have sailed at least with one other boat. People sort of broke off into little groups. Sometimes they'd do a bit of solo sailing. But, you'd almost always end up meeting up with other boats at these recommended anchorages all the way down.
And I have to say that Egypt, Sudan and Eritrea, we felt completely at ease, completely comfortable. We didn't feel threatened in any way. The piracy was a lot further south in the Red Sea. And the people of those countries were simply wonderful and welcoming. So that was all lovely. It was only when we left Eritrea and headed over to Yemen that it started to get very stressful.
And I do remember there was some pretty rough, the Red Sea was pretty rough. Is it kind of, I don't know if it's against currents or just against winds. I remember that in the podcast that you experienced a lot of just challenging sailing conditions.
It was. I mean, I think that the top half was easier because you have the winds behind you. And I think we broke our speed over ground records one day. So heading down the top half was easy enough. But the second half, you then had prevailing winds against you, some tide against you. Not to mention, of course, one boat whose engine completely broke down and had to be towed for a few hundred miles as well.
Gosh.
And I think there was one time when our fan belt broke and engine overheated, and so there were all these other things going on as well. But yes, the actual physical climate, the weather was fairly challenging. I mean, to be honest, we've been in worse.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad. I mean, because you can just duck in. There's plenty of little harbours and anchorages along there. Quite often they do contain men with machine guns, but you kind of get through that. I wouldn't say the weather was a concern. We had that one trip with the current against us that took hours, that took twice as long as we thought it was going to take. And in fact, they do say that the Red Sea, the transiting the Red Sea from north to south is supposedly slightly easier than south to north, I believe.
Mm.
So, it wasn't really too bad. We've had a lot worse.
We always talk to cruisers about, you know, check-in processes. As you went down through those countries, was there any one that was particularly difficult or challenging or interesting as far as the check-in process?
I think once you've been to checked in at India, any other country is a breeze. Seriously, this is the thing. As you go down through these countries, when you're less experienced, every time you check into an awkward place, it's like, it gets a bit frustrating. But then when you check into countries where it can take sometimes days to properly check in fully, you realize that a few hours of bureaucracy here or there, or having to wait for the office to open up for lunch after lunch, it becomes less of a headache. And I think we've got pretty good at that now, haven't we? The other thing we've learned is not to throw our dollies out the pram.
Never.
And start getting frustrated, especially with people in authority and the bureaucrats, is to not start getting angry. And I think we've just trained ourselves, haven't we, to just, you know, take a big breath, take a step back, count to 10.
Yeah.
And it's
And when they want another $10, just give them the $10, really. It's worth fighting over.
Well, I think cruising and sailing in general teaches you patience.
Yes.
Things breaking, situations, weather, you know, you just learn to be more patient.
Each other.
And with each other.
Yep. Got it in one, Steve.
So then you you get over to India, and you spent quite a bit of time in India, right? You just kind of set up shop there and stayed in one place.
Yeah, so the idea was, from the rally, we left Salalah in Oman and then went over to Mumbai in India, where we were received like royalty. We were so well treated by the Royal Bombay Yacht Club. Again, this was because of Low Brust's contacts over there. And then we made the journey down to Kerala, which is in the southwest corner. And we did that over a few weeks, didn't we? We stopped in Panjim, which is Goa, and a couple of other anchorages along the way down. Anyway, we had these grand ideas that we would sail up and down this west coast, but two things occurred to us very quickly. The first was the weather. We were racing to get down there before the beginning of the southwest monsoon. And the second thing we hadn't anticipated was the number of fishing boats. I have still now, even compared to Thailand, we have never seen so many fishing boats contained in such a small space. And it became a navigational nightmare. Yeah. So the idea of going up and down the coast, we were put off by this. Of course, the other thing as well was the bureaucracy involved in every place that we stopped at on the way down. It's the equivalent of checking in and checking out of a country when you come into an anchorage. And so, again, it would have hindered our progress and, you know, we didn't feel that we had the freedom to move. So when we got to Kerala, they had just finished completing, literally 2 weeks previous to our arrival, the first and only marina in the whole of India. And I think that still stands today.
It still stands today.
The only marina in India.
I mean, we laughingly call it a marina. It's really just a couple of pontoons built off a hotel. Mm-hmm. But it was one place that we felt safe, that we could leave the boat. And added to what Jamie was saying about the cruising along the coast there, in fact, most of the interesting things in India are inland. So we did a lot of inland traveling and exploring, and it was lovely to be able to leave the boat and Millie, who was very well looked after by Nazar, a local friend of ours, and just go off and tour inland.
You know we love Millie.
Oh.
Millie is like a highlight of your videos. We absolutely adore her. And when we saw that she was lost, we were very worried for you.
Thank you, Brandy. That's good to know. She is, I think she's definitely the prettier of the three of us. So we need to give her more screen time than ever. Yeah, she has been a naughty girl, and she went off for a little wander and disappeared for 4 days and typically got stuck on another boat by climbing into a hole and not being able to get out of the hole.
Oh, no.
She has done this a number of times. When we've come into marinas, we tend to let her off, but this is never happening again, by the way. But a couple of times in Turkey, she actually went off sailing. She climbed on a boat when we were at a little island, and she took a fancy to the big motorboat next to us, decided to climb into its engine room, and it wasn't until next day. Fortunately, she has her telephone number around her neck. We received a call from the skipper of the boat who said, "I think we have your cat." And so
the stowaway.
She was miles away.
She was miles away, yeah. It took all day to go and fetch her.
I think we had to stay overnight. We had to get there, stay overnight, bring her back.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
She's definitely your fishing buddy, Liz, that's
for sure. Oh, she is, yeah. I mean, she's the one that's encouraged me to learn to fish, I would say. When we troll off the back of the boat, she is on guard duty over the line, looking all the time, watching to see if anything occurs. But it's when we stop, when we drop the hook, the first thing she expects to come out. And so we like to do that in the evenings and in the mornings. And she has a wonderful diet of fresh, live fish.
She's definitely not going to starve, that's for sure.
It's fun watching the video. She gets so excited when she sees you fishing. She just sits there, looks over the side, and the minute that fish comes up, she's so excited.
Yes, she's brilliant actually as a fishing companion, because she can see right through the water better than I can, even with my sunglasses on. She tells me where they are. I can just see where she's looking. And together, and she uses her strange cat witchy ways to bring them to the surface.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah, she's an incredible character. You know, we just picked her up in Turkey, or rather she adopted us, and we never wanted to have a pet on board, although we're both pet lovers and animal lovers, and so we couldn't say no. And she's traveled with us, she's been all the way with us, all the way through the storms and the worst of it, and a constant companion and a complete sea cat.
Yeah,
now
she's experienced
much happier on a boat.
She's more experienced than us.
Well, that is it for part one of the interview for this week, and then on the next show we'll have part two. And in that interview, they start talking about some of their further sailing and challenges. They had a really challenging sail in the Indian Ocean that they'll talk about. And then also, we talk a lot about the extensive refit they did on their boat. And this is just an amazing refit they went through in Thailand, where they essentially refinished every surface on the boat. Yep. I mean, it looks like a brand new boat by the time they're done.
It was bare bones.
Yeah, and really beautiful work and a beautiful job. And then there's also a really touching turtle rescue in that, which Brandy really
loved.
Enjoyed.
It.
So look forward to that in part two. And definitely check out their YouTube channel and the re-release of their podcast. I'm going to put the links in the show notes, and we just know you guys will enjoy following their adventures. They're just really entertaining. They do a good job on the production, and especially when Liz and Millie start fishing, it's the most, it just makes you smile every time you see it. They just have such a blast fishing together, and Millie the cat is just a star on screen, so you got to watch her. I also want everybody to go check out their website, because we didn't talk about it on the podcast, but Liz is actually a really good photographer, a great photographer. In fact, she's been recognized for her travel photography by several publications, and they're just really, some of these images are just stunning. She's got a real eye for it. So we're going to put all the links in the show notes. And I just want to remind everybody, too, that if you're a listener in the iTunes podcast app, there's three little dots next to the episode. And if you hit those dots, and then you select view full description, it allows you to click directly on any of the links we talk about in the podcast. It's the fastest way. If you're, while you're listening, you can hit pause, hit those three little dots, go over, look at something, and then come back to the podcast. Works really cool. I use it on some of the other podcasts that do that, and just makes it really easy to follow the links. So up next, we're going to go into the sailing news. We're back, and we're going to do our sailing news for the week. And our first story is about a stolen yacht and a rescue at sea. So it starts off, this young man, Cathal Matthew, 29, sailed this boat about 50 miles out to sea after stealing it from Port Naki Harbor in Moray. I'm not sure where that is. I should have looked that up, but he had to be rescued after he went out in this boat and ended up getting in a gale force storm in the Moray Firth. So he's out sailing and got stuck in the storm, and he ends up drifting near an oil rig, which eventually catches the attention of the oil rig, and the captain on the board the oil rig ends up saving him. And after they get him in and take him to the shore, I guess they sentenced him, but it turns out that he also, before stealing the boat, stole an Audi S5 after taking it for a test drive. So he went out on a test drive in this car and then took off with the car and eventually dumped the car near the port and got on the sailboat and took off out to sea on the boat. He was sailing along, and then he hit the storm, and eventually he got near the oil rig. I guess he set off a flare, and the captain of the oil rig saw the flare and sent out a boat to rescue him. And he wasn't injured or anything, but he's like, get me off this boat. So they pull him off the boat, and he admits that he stole the boat to the captain. And so they called the authorities, and the authorities come out and get him. Turns out that afterwards, they weren't able to get a hold of the boat or whatever. So the boat ends up washing up on shore. And they got a hold of the owner, and they've recovered the boat, but it's just, like, no longer seaworthy. It's just trashed. The defense lawyer said that his client acted in an impulsive manner and put this down to being a coping mechanism and arising out of stress. So this guy went crazy. Stole the car, stole the boat, gets rescued at sea. And all for all that, he gets a sentence and jailed for a total of 19 months and 20 days. And after the hearing, the yacht owner, Ewan Patterson, said that he bought the boat from a widow of one of his friends who had died of cancer. Aww. And they had put all this money into it and fixed it up. And he writes, his quote in here is that he gets no compensation that, you know, there should be something better than that, that it's just a poor judgment. So they've, you know, put all this money into the boat. This kid comes along, steals it, takes it out, trashes it, washes up on shore. The whole boat's ruined and they get no compensation. I guess there's nothing in the ruling that he has to pay any of them but money back.
That's awful.
Yeah. So sad story.
And I looked up Moray. It's Scotland.
Scotland. Yep. Okay. I figured it was somewhere in the UK. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And our next story is a callback to a story we did a few shows back about the big Viking replica ship that has sailed across the Atlantic. And so they've now made it safely across the Atlantic and gone, I think, through like the Erie Canal and everything, and they're in the hitting the Great Lakes. But they're running into a little bit of a problem they did not expect, and that is the cost of ship pilot fees that are required throughout the Great Lakes. So I talked about this this story, like I said, a couple podcasts back, and essentially they built this huge replica Viking ship. It's the largest Viking ship that's sailing in the world, and this thing is massive. They say it can hold up to 100 men, and it's called the Drakenhara Hafragra. And the main reason I read the story is that I mainly wanted, because I had spent so much time learning how to say Drakenhara Hafagra, that I wanted to be able to say that.
Oh, very well done. Yes. Very well done.
So the Drakenhara Hafagra did not expect these high costs. And I guess it costs an average of $400 an hour to have a pilot guide a foreign vessel through the Great Lakes. And essentially, I think they need, it's required if you're not a pleasure craft, which this is considered a commercial vessel, that you have a pilot on board the entire time that you're in the Great Lakes. It's just, it's a safety concern. It's a requirement for the organization that governs the lakes. So they say the Viking ship organizers say that this is completely breaking their budget and they didn't expect it. And they said they talked to the authorities before they were going to go through the Great Lakes, and they were under the understanding they wouldn't be required to pay these things. But when this interviewer interviewed the West Great Lakes Pilot Association, the president, John Swarout, he said that they talked to them back in October before they ever started and gave them an estimation of the pilot fees and would never implied that they would be waived or exempted, and that they are required, and there was no ifs, ands, and buts around it. So they knew it coming into it, according to them. Yes. So now the Viking ship is going through some fundraising, hoping they'll raise enough money, because they may have to cancel some of the visits to places like Green Bay and Duluth and some of the other areas. And I'm sure there's a lot of people with Viking heritage up there in Minnesota and Wisconsin and those areas that would like to come over and see the Viking ship. But they're saying the cost is just too much, and they were hoping maybe even to get a volunteer pilot to come on board. But the president of the Pilot Association said that even if somebody wanted to volunteer, there's such a shortage of pilots in the Great Lakes that if that pilot is certified and they get a call, they're supposed to be available 24 hours a day, and if they get a call that a commercial ship needs them and they're volunteering somewhere, they'd have to leave and go do that work.
So how long would that ship be expected to be in the Great Lakes, or do they not know? I mean, are they just kind of passing through?
Yeah, they're passing. It's like a tour that they're doing. It says that their estimated cost to pilot them the rest of the way through the Great Lakes is $400,000. So that's a lot of money, $400,000.
Well, especially when you weren't expecting it, that's a big chunk of change.
That's to be debated, according to the guys here, that they say they quoted it. They never said it would be waived. I think I read another story that they were misunderstood, that I think they talked to Canada, and part of the Canada area, they said they would waive it. But when they entered the U.S. part of the Great Lakes, there was never any talk of waiving it. And that's the majority of the area that they were going through.
Right.
And so that's where all the pilot fees are. So the poor Drakenhara Hafragra.
And folks, if he's saying that wrong, just let it be.
Hey, now I practice this. You know, if you're a good Viking, you would totally understand what I'm saying.
Hey, I like the Vikings.
Yeah, absolutely.
Football,
that's
your
football team. So that's it. Yeah, hopefully they will. In fact, I did read recently that I think they have
a lot more of that raise. A lot of people donated and they have raised some of it, but I think they still got a ways to go. Otherwise, they're going to be stuck in the Great Lakes forever.
What do you mean? Wouldn't they just be able to turn around and go back or something?
They can't go anywhere without a pilot on board. So they would, the Coast Guard.
So the boat is just.
Yeah, the Coast Guard would pull them over and say, you're traveling illegally in the Great Lakes. You need to escort you to shore.
It's pretty intense.
Yep. $400 an hour. And the next story, you know how much I love a good boat building story.
Absolutely.
And so we have a special congratulations that goes out to John Augustinelli of Greece, New York. That's where it's, I guess it's near Rochester, New York, who, after 34 years building a 42-foot-long cutter-rigged boat in a small barn near his house, has finally pulled it out of the barn and got it to the water.
Wow.
He's finished after 34 years. Said, you know, he's always dreamed of building a boat. He loved sailing. It started when he was 3 years old and just he loved boats and sailing. So he always had a dream to build a boat. And he said it's taken a lot longer than he thought. It's about 20,000 hours over 34 years that he spent working on this. And John is a retired Eastman Kodak research scientist. He's been working all these years to get it done. They said the interior is, friends say, it's just absolutely beautiful. All teak and mahogany. It's just immaculate. Can sleep six comfortably. I mean, a 42-foot boat, that's a sizable project. He didn't build the hull. He bought a fiberglass hull that was manufactured in Rhode Island, but he did virtually everything else, fitted out the entire boat. And in order to keep the cost down, he actually saved money by buying secondhand teak, and he scavenged metal pieces from the scrap pile at the Kodak Park where he worked. So he made it all work along the way. And he said he just had tons of help from family and friends over the years. There's some story in here from one of his buddies from graduate school, and he was laughing about how he kind of got started. He said he always had this dream to build a boat. He was always talking about it. So at first he had this plan. He was going to build the boat in 2 years and sail around the world. You know, this, I'm going to build this boat in 2 years. I'm taking off. We're going. And then he met his wife and that became a 5-year plan. So, you know, he's working on the 5-year plan and then he starts having daughters, one daughter, two daughters, three daughters, and all that added more to the time and family time and work schedule. So after almost 35 years, the boat's finally coming out of the barn. He named the boat Grace, who is his mother's middle name. Aww. And he thought that was just a lovely word all around and a fitting name, he says, perhaps for a 34-year labor of love.
Oh, that's neat.
So congratulations, John. That's an amazing, amazing amount of work, and we're very excited for you to finally get on the water, and I'm sure that first sail is going to be really exciting.
God, could you just imagine building your own boat and putting it in the water that first day?
I hope it doesn't sink.
Well, A, I'm hoping it doesn't sink, and then thinking, I'm done, you know?
It's close to done.
I would cry.
Such a feeling of accomplishment. Like when we've talked to other folks on here, it's such pride that you have, you know, when you're pulling into a marina, everybody else is on their boats that they just bought, and you actually really just built that with your own hands. Amazing, amazing amount of work to get it done. So
definitely.
So I think that's it for the sailing news. We'll save a couple stories for the next episode. So up next is our product of the week. We'll be right back. So it is time for our product of the week, and yeah, this week, this is actually a fairly new product that we brought on the boat.
It is.
For years, we traveled on the boat with a portable jump pack, a battery jump pack, kind of what you use. You might even the trunk of your car if you have a dead battery and it jumps your car.
Right.
And I've always kept one on the boat because I think in our old boat, we only had one battery,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't start the engine. It was a pull start engine, but it still was gave me an extra battery. If the batteries died on the boat, we needed lights or some other kind of power source, I could plug things into it. It had a cigarette lighter adapter. And eventually that thing died. It wouldn't charge anymore. And so I was looking for a new one. And since then, since we'd had that one, they've come out with all these small, very powerful battery packs. And so I found this one that had good ratings on Amazon, and we've been using it for months now and works great. It's the Nectech Multifunction Car Jump Starter Portable Power Bank. And
that fast 10 yeah, times.
It's quite a name. This thing's pretty amazing. It's got 16,800, I guess, milliamp hours. Essentially, if you think about your smartphone, like the iPhones have about 1,900 milliamp hours in them. So this essentially could charge your iPhone like 8 or 9 times before it runs out. But it has circuitry in it that puts out a huge amount of amps. It can actually put out 600 amps to power jump a car or your boat. And that's one of the other reasons we have it. Now that we have a engine that requires actual battery to start it, if our battery's ever done dead, this gives us a backup. And it says here that, and I've read some of the reviews, and people use these in like used car lots to start all day long. And some of the guys say, you know, I'll jump car after car after car after car all day long, and it works.
It's
handheld.
It's yeah, really small.
This thing is tiny. It's like it's probably the equivalent of about 3 decks of cards all put together. It's really light and small. And that's the other nice thing is our last jump pack was huge. It was bulky, and this is really small and compact. But it'll put out 600 amps to jump a car. It'll say it'll jump start a 5-liter gas or 3-liter diesel engine up to 15 times in a row. So
that's insane.
Yeah, pretty amazing power that comes out of it. It's also got a little built-in LED in it, so you can use it like a flashlight. And it has all these different accessories, so you can hook up your laptop. It puts out, I think, 12, 16, and 19 volts as outputs. And it has USB connectors right into it, so you can hook USB devices directly into it. I just thought it's worked out really good. And I always worry about these battery things because you hear all these things in the news about things blowing up. And this one's got all kinds of circuitry in it for overcharge and overvoltage and making sure it doesn't short circuit. And we've charged it now probably 10 times, and it's
yeah,
we don't have any problems with it. It doesn't get overly hot or anything. Yeah. So this one runs right around $70 on Amazon, and I'll put all the links in the show notes. But we really
liked
it. And
it's in a handy zip pack. So everything is, all the different connections and stuff are all zipped up in one pack. So
yeah,
it's all fitted together.
Nice container that handles all the connections. And it's got jumper cable connectors that you put on it if you do need to jump on the battery. So we really like it. So that is the product of the week, the Nectech Multifunction Car Jump Starter Portable Power Bank.
Which is in our Amazon store.
Yep, the Amazon store. I put the link in there, and I'll put the link in the show notes. Like I said, you just go over the show notes, and you can click right on it. It'll take you right there. So that is the product of the week for this week. And as we talk about always, anything that you buy on Amazon, we'd really like you to use our Amazon link and look at our Amazon store. We're constantly putting things in the Amazon store. Added a few more items this week, so we're up over 100 items in there. Great also books. We put all kinds of books that we read or people recommend to us that we want to read and put it in there. And we'll get a small commission from Amazon. You still pay the exact same price you always do. And I don't think after the last podcast I said I was going to put the support link up on our website. I finally got all that set up. So if you just go to our website, it will show you, there's right at the top menu, it says help support TSR. And it gives you 8 different ways in there that you can help support the podcast. Some of them you can give us a few dollars. Some of them you just help share things and spread the word about the podcast. It's all in there. And so take a look at that. Really help us out.
And with the Amazon program, you added quite a few new links for international listeners.
Oh, I forgot all about that. Yeah. So I'll have to get the list in front of me. But essentially, I think it's all the European countries. So if you're in France, Italy, Germany, the UK.
Canada's been on there.
There's a couple others in there. It's essentially any of those countries. If you listen to the podcast, which we have listeners in over 80 countries, and you're going to buy something through Amazon, hop onto our website, click on the link, and then buy it through Amazon, and we'll get a little bit of commission from Amazon, and you pay the same price. It really helps us out. Makes a big difference. We really like
it. Yeah, it's very simple to use, guys.
So that's about it. You want to talk about
social media? Don't forget to check us out on social media, Facebook. We're constantly posting on there, doing those live updates. Instagram, make sure that you're hashtagging your summer pictures for us, the hashtag The Sailing Road. And don't forget to subscribe to YouTube. I am really kicking up on these videos, and hopefully you guys are enjoying them. I'm having fun making them. They are pretty time-consuming, so I get them out when I can, of course, but it's fun doing these videos. So make sure that you're subscribing. You'll see them. Make sure you give us a thumbs up. And
comment on them, too.
Comment, yeah. Let me know what you think. You hate them? Kind of be nice. Say it nicely if you love them. It's always fun to hear you guys. So
absolutely.
And be sure to give us some feedback on the shows. We love to hear you guys about your cruising adventures, what's going on in your lives. You bought a new boat, build a new boat. You're fishing with your pocket fisherman, whatever's going on, guys. Hit us up on crew, @thesailingroad.com.
And I think that's it for this week. So thanks for listening. We really appreciate all your support, and we hope to see you on the water soon.
See you, everybody.